But one of the best things I did see that didn't get talked about from last week is something that happened off the field. I saw the Rapids holding a jersey. I didn't know what it meant. Had a last name on it. Dobrzynski. I can't sound things out, and it's a sad state of affairs. But Joan Dobrzynski is being honored with that jersey. And I, at the time, I wondered, what is this? I have no idea. Who are they honoring? What are they doing? We got a DM from Mark Goodman. Most of you probably know him, if you know him, as Rapids Rabbi. Amazing work on holding the high line, the best way to stay up to date with what's going on with the Rapids. And he said, hey guys, just give this a read. It's something important for the club.
Altitude's undefeated. Crack rainbow, punch it up, whatever it was in.
Not a huge fan of it.
I didn't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and started to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure.
Hello, Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Thursday, December 21st, 2023. Just what, three more shopping days till Christmas? Or do we count, Rabbi Mark Goodman, do we count the 25th, actually? So then it's only like, I don't know, I can't do calendar math. My brain is scrambled this week, listeners, because the Open Cup drama is happening as the American soccer civil war is on. The MLS Super Draft happened, and I couldn't imagine it being more chaotic and busy for the Colorado Rapids than it was. We've got a free agent in the form of Omir Fernandez, and apparently Chris Armas is only on a two-year contract with the Rapids. To talk about all of these things with his post-festivities to talking to me pre all of my holiday festivities, Rabbi Mark Goodman, Shabbat Shalom, Happy Hanukkah.
Thanks, buddy. It's great to be through Hanukkah, but before Christmas, it feels like the eye of the storm of the winter holidays. Matt, you celebrated some Pidmas with some of our favorite writers and soccer people the other day. How did Pidmas go?
Pidmas was good. John Babiak is house sitting. I won't reveal a whole lot of details because he kind of wants to keep that private. But yeah, so he had a house, and it was going to be a little get together, and it was going to be civilized, and there wasn't going to be debauchery or anything lit on fire or
no debauchery,
an excessive amount of alcohol consumption. And so we invited a handful of people, and we had a small get together. And I am having a if hot girl summer is a thing, Mark, then I would say I am having like festive, social, extroverted winter here for me. So, listeners, I don't know if we've talked about this. I had a significant thing that happened in my career that was good, and I had to kind of incubate on that. So I went into what the self-improvement space from the internet would refer to as monk mode, and I'm recently coming out of that. And I am realizing that there's difficulties associated with that, in that when you are in monk mode and so introverted and so focused on what you're doing, if I wasn't talking to a coworker and I wasn't talking to Rabbi or an immediate family member, usually my mom on the phone, I wasn't talking to anybody. I wasn't talking. My outdoorsy activities that I do are ones that I enjoy doing in solitude, and that ones that I do them in ways they can be more fun. There are ways that I can have more fun and do a harder hike when I go by myself than when I go in a group. And then similarly, the singles line for any ski resort moves way faster at this time of year than it does if you're in a group of pretty much three is like critical mass, probably, in terms of like moving through the line quickly, unless it's a four chair. So there's that. And so I was so focused on that, Mark, and I became more introverted as a result of COVID, that I was just kind of happy going through my default process of like not being social and doing anything. And I full on busted out of that, and I've had like social activities, all of the other things and everything. So I am seeing all the people, I'm interacting with everybody, I am saying yes to all of the house parties, and it was wonderful. John Babiak doing well, his heart doing well, Mark, and then got to see a couple of our other friends and got to tell them a little bit about some of the reporting stuff that I've been doing as well. So we debriefed on the Super Draft with Eric Stinson and his girlfriend Megan Kavanaugh. Jared Geisler, Mark, who has been out in the ether a little bit, as he obviously has a little one and is not sleeping a whole lot and not socializing outside of his house, and saw the rare Marco Cummings as well. Saw him,
Marco Cummings, former Colorado Rapids media dog. Let's see, he wrote for MLS. back in the day. He wrote for the Post. I mean, he is like, he is an OG that I have mad respect for.
Pro Soccer USA as well. So yeah,
Pro Soccer USA. Right. So, very good.
So Marco, being the semi recluse that he is, Mark, I got to see him for one of my three annual times of interacting with him. So a good time was had by all. It was fun. The quiche was good. The apple pie was good. There was a dog that I got to say hi to. So I am feeling full on socialized and everything. Wow. Flying home on Saturday, going immediately to a friend's miss, and obviously big thing on the 25th, and then just family and chilling, and then back into it come January.
Incredible. Good stuff.
Mark, well, let's talk about the Open Cup. Because MLS, because Major League Soccer was like, yeah, we want those six match days open. And Apple TV told us that they didn't like somebody else having the broadcast rights control to being able to show games that Messi is included on. So we're not going to.
Well, that's what you conjecture. I will spit my theories, but you go ahead. Continue and drop the news for those of our listeners who didn't pick up this little tidbit.
Okay, so this is, we'll stick with on the record, the official public PR.
No, you can say whatever you want, Matt. I just want to clarify that, like, we don't actually know that Apple, like, put the boot to Don Garber's throat and said, you will ignore the U.S. Open Cup because we need all the dates on the calendar. And by all the dates, I mean as long as they fall on a Saturday or an occasional Wednesday. Continue, my brother.
Major League Soccer pulled out of being in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup for the purposes of the 2024 iteration of the competition. They said that they would then send their MLS Next Pro teams there instead. And then U.S. Soccer said, yeah, we didn't give you, you didn't, you have to ask for this. We have to approve it, and we're not going to approve it. And also there's some obscure laws in the bylaws to where if you interpret it, you have to be in the cup competition at some level in order to be first division. So U.S. Soccer civil wars, and then what's the sports equivalent of the Supreme Court, are possibly dealing with this. So Mark, I can see both sides of this, because I have said I felt burnout from this season. The season is too long. There are too many games. There's too many match days. There's too many midweek games, and MLS made this happen because they wanted to clear out a month of the schedule in order to have Leagues Cup, in order to get all that sweet Liga MX money and have all that stuff and give more big critical games and big stadiums with big teams to Apple TV for their broadcast and have those across multiple days in that schedule where the sports calendar is a little bit light, because we're talking about finishing up before Labor Day. So it's before both of the throw balls get started. No basketball, no hockey. You're competing with baseball. Hooray. So I can understand where MLS says that the, if we're not getting rid of Leagues Cup because we have to have that money, which is an understandable business decision. I don't believe it's in the spirit of the game or the history of the competition, which is where I think a lot of people are emotional about the Open Cup. That's where I am, to be honest. I can understand where, from MLS's perspective, they thought that this was the path of least resistance. They thought that this was the easiest bad decision in order to make that frees up six midweek dates that you have and everything. You can then potentially compress, move around the schedule, play fewer Saturday games during the international window. We still have some teams, a handful of games being played during those Saturdays during the international window. And so that was the argument behind it. And then it was, in theory, more games at a competitive level for the MLS Next Pro. The Rapids and the league executives that I speak to, Mark, are, there's some variance, but they kind of think there's a lot of them who think that Next Pro can be competitive with the championship. And they certainly all think that it is better than USL League One. Listeners, Rabbi is shaking his head. I would agree with him on that. The flaw that I see in this is that it is not in the spirit of the history of the Open Cup. I think it obviously, I think certainly somewhere in there, there's the, if this wasn't the intention, it was an unintended benefit to Major League Soccer, in that it diminishes the one competition that MLS teams are in, that other non-MLS teams are in, that they are now in conflict with. Because with the decoupling between the U.S. Soccer Federation and some Soccer United marketing, now MLS, the MLS owners and some do not have control over the finances. They don't have the rights to the Open Cup. So this was now a competition that potentially was being monetized off of MLS teams off of Messi making it to the final, albeit not playing in that final, that somebody else had broadcast and marketing control over. And we've seen with Major League Soccer, their first rule is you can have fun and you can make money in American soccer as long as they are a part of it or that they are controlling it. I think the outrage is completely understandable from the sickos like you and me on social media, Mark. At the same time, I think there's a lot of people who like the idea of the Open Cup more so than actually like the Open Cup itself. Yeah. Because if the outrage was that significant, then the Rapids would not be playing Hailstorm in a local derby in the first ever game between those teams and all the hype and hoopla around it. There would have been more than like 1,500, 2,000 people at games. For comparison, listeners, Rapids this past year averaged about 16,000 on Saturdays, 12,000 on Wednesdays. How much of that is ticket distributed? I'm not entirely sure. In any case, 4K goes down. Mark, I would be hard-pressed to find the last Rapids game, last Rapids Open Cup home game on a Wednesday that had more than 5,000 butts in seats. So the simple fact is people do not show up to those early rounds of the Open Cup, which is the majority of it. And I don't think that the teams on the field in marketing on social media and butts in seats start taking it seriously until probably the quarterfinal. And so I can understand where it is a waste of a match day and it's not financially profitable. How much of that could be solved by MLS teams then comping an Open Cup ticket for the first round? I'm not sure. But Mark, I've been talking a lot. You talk.
Well, so I accept most of your premises and a lot of them are correct and I don't disagree. I think there are a couple of things I want to add to that. I mostly agree with everything you said, so I won't necessarily restate anything you just said. I think there's a couple things that I feel really hard done by as a hardcore. Thing one is MLS is pulling its senior team out of a cup competition that it doesn't profit from after years of doing a terrible job of promoting it, right? And so the point you made, which is true, which is that fans don't come midweek to these games, although in the Colorado Rapids case, fans don't come midweek for anything because Commerce City isn't that great to get to. The timing against Denver traffic isn't so great, right? But I think my strongest objection is MLS, which didn't directly profit to the same degree that it does from the regular season and the other tournaments it plays in, never put any energy or effort into promoting the Open Cup and is now basically pulling out of it because they didn't see the gate numbers that they would have hoped to have gotten, and Apple's not getting any revenue from that. There's a simple solution for that to me, which is one, spend a couple years promoting it, and two, figure out how both MLS and Apple can profit from this, right? And that's, to me, they're just looking at an asset and they're saying, well, it's not profitable, so we should spin it off. And, you know, sometimes that works, but often, you know, sometimes you spin that off and it makes profit. You go, wait, we wanted that. You know, that was a good asset. What were we doing there? So anyways, that's thing one. Thing two is one of the other premises that you kind of put out there that I think you were arguing on MLS's behalf, and that's fine, was that MLS in the early rounds, it's like wear and tear on the team, and they don't get a lot of profit out of it and whatever. Remember that in the early rounds, the MLS teams are often playing their reserves, playing their young players anyways. They're giving their senior teams a rest. They're using it as a development opportunity. This is probably if the Rapids have a 30-man roster and they usually have the same 18 in the, you know, available for selection list of players, then that means there's 12 guys who almost every week don't get a shot at playing in a meaningful game. And I say that by slamming MLS Next and saying that they're not meaningful games. And to me, they're not. I mean, they're, you know, I know they're fun to watch, but like, I don't think, you know, like I wasn't upset when the Rapids didn't win the MLS Next Cup, because who cares if you win the MLS Next Cup? It's a developmental league. You're trying to get those players better. Having the worst team in Major League Soccer, or excuse me, the second to worst Major League team in soccer last year, but having one of the best MLS Next teams did not make me feel good last year, right? So giving those players a meaningful couple of reps in something that would ultimately lead to a cup is important. And the last thing I'll say is this, which I posted in the Substack this last week, which is the FA Cup is the oldest you know, sporting tournament that's a team national sport, I think, around. It's the oldest soccer cup there is. And the national, the Open Cup, which used to be called the Challenge Cup, is the oldest American soccer cup. It's a meritocratic thing. You know, your Sunday pub league can put a team on the field, and if they wind their way through the right pathways, they could wind up playing Lionel Messi. That is a magical thing. That is like, you know, Lipscomb or Grambling in the NCAA tournament taking on Duke or UCLA, but cooler because it's your men's rec league team down at the JCC. It's the YMCA, you know, over 30 league champions going
it's
up against
average Joe's, Mark, playing the New York Yankees.
It's
in the
amazing.
World Series.
There's nothing like it. And to say, you know, the coolest thing that could happen, we're going to eliminate it because we're not making enough profit. I mean, I think that's the other thing, which is I don't think MLS understands how great U.S. Open Cup is. And I think the last thing that is, you know, this is, we still are going to wait to see what happens. And then I will get off my high horse is that I don't, you know, the other thing that's bizarre about this whole thing is that U.S. soccer is U.S. soccer. And they shouldn't have to sit down with Major League Soccer and bust out the whooping stick and threaten and cajole and say, you know, you have to do this. They should have other levers to do it. But I don't think it's wrong at the end of the day to basically say, we will hammer you mercilessly. I mean, this is ridiculous and it probably wouldn't happen, but I would suggest that it's possible, theoretically, that U.S. soccer's biggest weapon here is to say MLS players who play on teams who refuse to go to the Open Cup may not be selected for national duty. Now, that's not going to happen. They would never do that. That is like, that's beyond the nuke. That's like the nuclear and chemical option combined. And it would be cutting off your nose to spite your face. But like U.S. soccer, like, needs to both find a way to make this financially lucrative enough that MLS is going to get into it. But also they need to bust out the whooping stick and say to Don Garber, like, this is not acceptable. Like, this is not, you can't do this. And even if they wind up with a U.S. Olympics hybrid style, you know, you will play your MLS Cup team, but you have to have six overage players and pretend it's your senior team. Like, whatever the hell they come up to, it's fine by me. But this is not acceptable. Ruining the Open Cup will make me incredibly sour on the MLS executives forever. And, you know, and I think, by the way, all of national soccer media feels the same way. And MLS ruining its reputation with a lot of these soccer writers is not a great idea, I don't think.
Last two things that I'll say on this, Rabbi. First of all, the MLS executives better be hoping that Next Pro is actually in the same tier as the champ. Like, can you imagine, Mark?
If, well, I don't think whenever... they are. I think they're going to get hammered. I think they're going to lose a lot of their League One games.
What if it's a clean sweep? What if no MLS Next Pro team beats a championship team in this next, like, when they come up wherever, at whatever round they play?
It won't be that bad, but it'll be bad. I mean, US, and the other thing is, and this is one of the reasons that this is such a hot mess, is trying to announce this the last minute basically means that, you know, the US MLS Next Pro is the third tier. So suddenly the USL Championship are the teams that enter last. It totally screws with the entire format of the cup, which already exists. There's already a plan for when all these first, second, and third round games happen. Like, what are you going to do? You know, you're going to make the tournament shorter? Are you going to open up more slots for amateur teams and rejigger things, which have already been decided? Here in Pittsburgh, Steel City FC has already qualified. What are you going to do? Allow a couple more qualifiers in because, you know, basically practically 29 teams have punted on it. It's insane. The other thing that's insane about this, which makes no sense whatsoever, although it's kind of crazy, is the U.S. Open Cup gives you a CONCACAF berth, which means you're kind of guaranteeing, to be blunt, a USL championship or even potentially League One team will qualify for CONCACAF, which that's crazy. I mean, imagine the Pittsburgh Riverhounds playing Club America or Tigres next year. I mean, that would be the craziest thing ever. And it could happen.
Yeah. Imagine Rapids 2 Mark drawing Club America, and they have to go to, and it's Ali Larraz and Sebastian Anderson and Boubacar Keita having to go up against like the starting 11 for Club America in the round.
In the Azteca versus like 120,000 rabid Mexican fans. That would make me crap my pants. That would, as any human being, let alone like a 17-year-old, which is what they're going to be bringing. Anyway.
But also, Mark, get our passports ready because HDHL is totally going on the road if that happens. But no, if the concern was about fixture congestion and everything, Mark, I feel like MLS should just open up the can of worms in terms of allowing.
It's not because it's not about fixture congestion because the Colorado Rapids play one or two games in the Open Cup. I say one, they lose to the USL team. So like the Rapids are the outlier because they lose to these lower division teams. But like almost half of MLS teams, and maybe even more than half of MLS teams doing the math, play one or two Open Cup games. And that's it. It's not about fixture congestion. And anybody who says it, if it ever happened that I was at, which I never am, if I'm ever at a press conference and a professional executive says that, I will stand up. As God is my witness, Matt, I will stand up and start ranting at them. And I will literally cut them off. I don't care who it is. Don Garber, Porrick Smith, you know, Bruce Arena. I'll do it to Bob Bradley, even though Bob Bradley doesn't play in the league anymore. But I have no respect for someone who's going to blow smoke up my you-know-what and pretend and pitch the party line when it's an illogical and possibly gaslighting or dishonest comment. You have got me all pissed off. What did you do to me? What'd you put in my tea, Matt?
No, I agree with you, Mark. But if it was about fixture congestion, why would you just not then increase the opportunities for like call-ups from guys on Next Pro and everything? Yeah. So then play the academy kids who are on the bench. Call up a bunch of Next Pro guys.
It's
go out there.
Money. It's
see if you can beat, you know, Sacramento Republic or OKC Energy or whomever, and then go with that. You know, Mark, how many more, if instead of only getting four of the call-ups, Next Pro guys got 10, how many more times would we have seen Yosuke Hanyo, Remy Cabral, those kind of guys as well? So for me, leave it open for clubs that take the Open Cup seriously, like Seattle Sounders, like Sporting Kansas City, to where if they want to play their first teams in that, let them do so. And for the teams that want to just basically send a reserve team, make it easier for them to do that. I don't know why the USL Championship, why the USL would have a thing against that, because that is creating an opportunity where clubs that take it less seriously are easier to beat by those championship teams. So if it was really about that, open up the, you know, say automatically, every single USL guy, you can play them in three Open Cup games. They can appear in three Open Cup games, and then you can have a smaller number that can appear in as many as 10 first team games, and then maybe only six of those can be cup competitions as well. You could do something like that and leave it open for Minnesota United not taking Open Cup seriously, and then they can, you know, throw out a bunch of teenagers there, and then, you know, Galaxy can basically play Los Dos or LA Galaxy 2, and then clubs that want to take it seriously can play those first teams and allocate those roster slots for the Saturday games afterwards or whatever when there's injuries. Mark, there's the Open Cup. Or no, excuse me, there's the MLS Super Draft, which happened.
Ooh, now you've made me happy. You've switched me from angry to happy. We're having all the emotions in this podcast this week.
Yes, so the MLS Super Draft happened, Mark. And the Rapids had a bunch of picks, and they used a bunch of them, and they traded a couple of them for a third one. And then so here's just the thought process, the flow chart of how we got here is super confusing, listeners. I wrote all about it on Burgundy Wave. I'll include a link in the show notes if you really want to read all of that. But so second overall, the Rapids selected Wayne Frederick. He is a midfielder and defender for Duke University. He's the highest drafted.
And he was our natural pick. He was just, this is what happens when you finish second to the bottom.
Yes, so he was the natural second overall pick, midfielder defender, but the Rapids absolutely see him as an 8 or possibly as an 8-6 in the midfield, and they really like him, and he's super versatile, and so that was their selection there. And then at number 4 overall, they took one of the two Generation Adidas players that were available in Kamani Stewart-Baines. He's a forward out of the University of Maryland. 3 goals, 7 assists in 14 games this past season, but none of those goals came against Big Ten opposition. It's somehow, Mark, he still won Big Ten Freshman of the Year. Really dynamic, winger, a very direct winger, plays mostly on the left. I would imagine the Rapids see him as a left midfielder, as a left winger. Then they made a bunch of trades with the two later first-round picks that they had to ultimately accumulate some GAM and then trade that GAM for the player that was selected fifth overall, which was Nate Jones, a center back out of the University of Washington. Mark, this guy is a, in terms of skill set, measurables, and just his the body and the way that he plays and his height and his weight and everything, he is a parallel to Andreas Maxeu. He is a left-footed center back who likes to play on the left. He is 6'5". He is physical. He is good in the air, attacking-wise and defensively, and he has a good pass on him. And then there were also four late-rounders. They got a forward out of Butler named Palmer Alt. They got Anderson Rosa, a left-back out of UCF. Mark Klenkenberg, Mark, who is a very good super draft guy, compared him to, from a likeness standpoint in terms of just how he plays positionally and what he does tactically, he is the most like Lucas Estevez of the players that were available selection in this draft. And then also in the later round, they got Gunnar Studenhoff, who is a forward out of Manhattan College. And so those were their draft picks, Mark. But the key thing here, listeners, is that the Rapids, according to Porrick Smith, who I spoke to after the super draft, they had identified who their top two targets were. They were Kamani Stewart-Baines and Wayne Frederick. They found out Rabbi. There was a trade. Austin swapped with FC Dallas, and FC Dallas was moving up to take Wayne Francis. That is what they heard, which is why they took him at 2, and then Kamani Stewart-Baines at 4. I was freaking out, Rabbi, because as soon as I saw that Toronto took the guy from Lipscomb and then not one of the GA players, I was like, okay, the Rapids get their pick of which one of the GA forwards they want. Where in my pre-draft preview, I said they're taking whichever GA guy that Toronto doesn't take. So then I was like, oh crap, he's not going to be available. What if they don't get the one they want if Dallas takes the GA player that they want at 3? So they ended up, I don't care the order in which they selected the players, Mark, as long as they got their two targets. And Wayne Frederick and Monty Stewart-Baines were their top two targets. And then one of their other top four was Nate Jones, who he was already off the board. They were hoping that one of their other top picks was going to be available in the later round, either at 12 or 20 or 21. And then Andrew Weavey made the joke with all the trades going down that when Porrick Smith is standing, he is making a trade. And every single time they shot to the war room out there in the Summit Club and Porrick Smith was indeed standing, made a bunch of trades, got some GAM, traded that GAM to who selected Nate Jones, Mark?
Austin.
Yeah. So then they got Nate Jones from him. So, and they were virtually GAM neutral, Mark. I think it was 25K that ultimately they ended up having to part ways as well, or that might have been uneven in terms of between 2024 and 2025 GAM. But so in any case, they get three of their top four picks that they wanted without needing to trade to get one of that big picks. And then they got guys, for the most part, they see some potential in diamonds in the rough, a la Dominic Baggi in the second and in the third rounds. Mark, this was some really good maneuvering, thinking on his feet, and creativity from Porrick Smith and the front office. And this was the perfect opportunity in terms of how, going back to the summer, the Rapids planned, offloaded players who they were not going to retain this year, got draft picks, and then dig the legwork ahead, given the rule change that allowed juniors and sophomores to be selected, to where this was the biggest pool. This was a once-in-a-super draft rule change pool of players eligible for the MLS Super Draft. And assuming, I'm going to say, Mark, just two of those three big picks, Wayne Frederick, Kamani Stewart-Baines, and Nate Jones, if 3 years from now, two of those guys are starters on the Rapids, I think we can say that it's a success. And if three of those guys come good, and then one of those other guys is just remotely, not immediately comes to preseason, and then immediately gets cut because he's clearly not good enough because he's a late rounder and everything, Mark, this could be the greatest draft in Colorado Rapids history, and boy, did the Rapids need it, given what happened this summer, given what happened this year, and given how the Rapids choose to prioritize the Super Draft.
That's a little bit of a strong statement for me. I think the strong statement that I'll make in favor of the Rapids is that this is what Porrick Smith does best. He is a master of arbitrage. He understands what assets are worth and how to flip them for other assets. And so he worked his magic here and figured out, I think the thing that's really interesting is that Porrick understood, and let's give credit to Fran Taylor, who's, you know, kind of in this role, but has also been doing this kind of work for many years alongside Porrick. but he understands the value of an international slot. He understands the value of a top pick versus a mid-tier pick versus a bottom pick. Now, the reason I want to like cool your jets and throw some cold water on you a little bit is the value of the MLS Super Draft has been in rapid decline for the last 10 years. 15 years ago, you were pulling players who you might slot right into your starting lineup in the first 15 spots of the Super Draft. In the last couple of years, everything after the 10 spot in the Super Draft was a very questionable asset. There are some really great finds in the last couple of years. The 2022 draft had Roman Celentano, who was a starting goalkeeper for Cincinnati. That is a really great pick. But then you drop down a few spots and you get, like, at the 7 pick, you get Matt Nosita, who I don't recall playing at all. And then you go further down, and basically after 16, most of the players haven't played at all, with a few little exceptions here and there of like some diamonds in the rough that hit real low and are really exciting. That's the reason why the Super Draft isn't. By the way, the great hit in 2022 was Jasper Lofelson of formerly of Pitt, who RSL picked up with the 81st pick. He was the fourth from the bottom. He's almost Mr. Irrelevant, and he's been mostly a starting defensive midfielder or fullback for RSL. That's a great depth pick. That is kind of just the dream kind of pick. That's a Dom Baggi level pick in an era when the Dom Baggis of the world don't really happen very much, and the round at which Dom Baggi was picked doesn't exist anymore. We don't go to the fourth round anymore. And teams even pass in the third. But anyways, my point is the Rapids got three really great picks here, and then three picks that are like, it's gravy if any of them winds up signing. And those three picks, the 2, the 4, and the 5 pick, are really exciting. I think it's really clear. And Matt, your article in Burgundy Wave is the gold standard. Nobody else is going to touch you. Wayne Frederick has a lot of really neat tools. I think the challenge I've seen in the video I've watched of him is that it's hard to understand what he's going to be. He's got a really nice turn. He's got a very nice first touch. And his passing is pretty good. He's a little long and lanky and skinny to be a midfielder. He's a little light physically, and he's a little bit of a twig. And he's not quite tall enough to be a center midfielder. He's probably not, a center back. He's probably not fast enough to be an outside back. So you're looking at like a number 8, but he's awfully a central midfielder. But he's awfully tall for a central midfielder. Those guys tend to be a little bit smaller. So he's a little bit of a confusing player. And I think he's young is the other thing. He just finished his freshman year in college. So he's still a work in progress. The one thing that I saw on the tape where I was kind of like, I don't know, man, was that his ground passes were really nice. He didn't really lay in many through balls. He lays a square pass in. You know, square passes where you're passing it to the feet of a player who is facing your way. He's going to have to and that's an NCAA thing, but he's going to have to develop a better eye for a more advanced pass. The thing that kind of worried me the most, two things worried me the most on the tape, and he can develop these things, but not everybody develops any of these things, is his crosses were kind of long, looping, slow. They weren't hit with pace. They weren't that accurate. So he's got like a 30-yard long cross that's kind of eh. That's going to have to get better. I mean, in MLS, you've got to be able to hit a 40-yard diagonal on a dead run. I know that that's asking a lot, but he is absolutely, to my mind, Matt, Wayne Frederick is not going to play a single minute in MLS this year. He's going to spend his whole time with Next Pro, unless I was watching, you know, weird tape. Matt wants to say something. Go ahead, Matt.
So, Mark, I should point out the Rapids did not draft any players who are out of eligibility. Nate Jones is a junior. Right. Anderson Rosa is academically a senior, but he has an extra year of eligibility should he want to use it. I've heard right. whispers that he wants to finish school. So there's a possibility, Mark. Keep in mind, listeners, right. that when a player gets drafted by the MLS team, they have 2 years of their MLS rights as well. So the sophomores right now could go back for their entire junior year. They could go back and play out the fall semester of their senior eligibility and then leave with one semester to go, leave in December of 2024. As seniors with one semester of their undergrad left to go, sign with the Rapids right before the new year comes, and no other MLS team can touch them. So, Mark, they didn't draft any seniors. So the only player right now who for sure will be in camp for preseason is the GA guy, Kamani Stewart-Baines, who was a natural freshman at Maryland. I have heard rumors, Mark, there's a very strong possibility that every single one of the other underclassmen that they signed will go back for their next year, and that Anderson Sosa will finish his career, will finish his schooling, graduate, walk in April, May, June, and then join the team in the summer. So, there, Mark, listeners, you should be prepared for the possibility that none of these guys are with the team in preseason, with the exception of Stewart-Baines. And if they do show up for preseason, they void the rest of their eligibility. That is the NCAA rule, Mark. So that's something that the club should be very, very careful about.
So just to finish my thoughts on the top three picks. So Kamani Stewart-Baines is an exciting player. He's even more raw than Wayne Frederick in what I have watched, which is that he has a lot of speed. He's a very fast player. His acceleration is good. He is very right-footed. And it's even more confusing in the sense that he was playing at Maryland on the left side. So he was basically playing as what is referred to as an inverted winger, which happens if that's a fun thing that you can do. He has a good knack for goal and a nose for goal and finishing. He is going to be somebody used this phrase the other day. I really liked it. And I've heard it before, but it'd been a while since I heard it. A chalk in the boots kind of guy. He likes to run that. He can run that line, with the ball. The problem is, and this is a very common NCAA player problem, is he strikes me as maybe a little bit one-dimensional. He is a vertical player. It reminds me of the 1990s LA Raiders, for the two people on listening to the podcast who might catch that reference. Al Davis used to just like Hail Marys and fast dudes. And he literally signed guys who were off of the Olympics 4x100 team to play for the Raiders because he thought, speed kills. That's not really true if your technical ability is not there. So, but, you know, you can't develop speed, really. You can get a little bit better, but natural speed is natural speed. So that's the exciting thing about Kamani Stewart-Baines. It's interesting that you note that he might go back, and I think that's a really interesting comment about Nate Jones, who is a junior, because I think looking at Nate Jones, he's the most ready to play right now player, and I'm not the only person who pointed out the guys covering the draft for MLS said that too. I didn't watch the comments on Nate Jones particularly carefully while the draft was going on, but as soon as the Rapids picked him up, I could go and rewind the tape, and it's all there. He's big. He's physical. He's fit. He's ready. His technical skills at center back are all there. I could see a world where he picks up 800 to 1600 minutes for the starting Rapids team this year. I don't think it'll happen, but I think it could. I think he has that potential, which is the best thing. And of the probably five or six top picks in the entire MLS draft, I think he's the most likely to be ready to play MLS minutes right now. That's both because of his age and his skill and his position, right? His position doesn't necessarily because his position requires physical size and strength, which don't require development, he's already there. So I don't have any thoughts on the bottom three. I have learned from covering, this is the 10th MLS draft I've covered, I think, as a reporter, it might be the 9th, I'm not sure, that spending a lot of time thinking about the fourth round guy is not necessarily time well spent. Those guys tend not to pan out, but I will be, if they sign with the Rapids or even with MLS Next Pro, I'll be very excited to see them play.
let's move on. Mark, earlier this week, we got news that the Colorado Rapids signed free agent and now former New York Red Bulls right winger Omer Fernandez. And then also we got news that the two homegrowns came to an agreement with the club. Sebastian Anderson and Oliver LaRoz signed one-year contracts for 2024. And then Sebi has 2 years worth of team options, so 2025 and 2026. And then Ollie is on just a one-and-one, so guaranteed for 24 and then a team option for 2025. We'll start with Omer Fernandez, Mark. Winger coming out of the New York Red Bulls Academy. He would have joined the first team and signed as a homegrown while Chris Armas was the head coach at Red Bulls. 15 goals and 13 assists in 112 appearances all time. In MLS, he'll turn 25 in February. And really good as a right winger. He's played as a central attacking playmaker and even as a false nine. And if you look at his FB ref stats, pretty Red Bullsian, where as a winger, he's a very good presser. And then he doesn't do a whole lot in terms of progression. It is very direct in terms of what he does on the ball as well. And then he's about average and relatively productive in terms of his contributions on goal, be it mostly in the form of goals. And I should point out, Mark, he has a good track record of scoring in derbies. He loved a goal in the Hudson River Derby. And boy, do the Rapids need goals, especially at RSL this year. Yep. In the Rocky Mountain Cup. Mark, this seems like I have to see this as a... he came here because of Chris Armas, and then I have to imagine, based on his stats and his underlying numbers and where his potential could be, Mark, now that he's in the prime of his, he's about to enter the prime years of his career and everything, the Rapids could have doubled his salary, and honestly, I wouldn't bat an eye or be worried about that. And it is a three-year contract, listeners, with a team option, so 24, 25, 26, so the team option would be for 2027. Mark, your thoughts on Omer Fernandez becoming a Burgundy boy?
I was kind of mad that they picked him when they did, because I was literally about to drop a Substack article where I went through all of the free agent picks, and of all the guys that were available, he was the one guy I said, they should go get him. He makes a lot of sense for this team because he's at a position, the attacking midfield position that the Rapids don't really have right now. He's of an age and at a price range that the Rapids can afford. And he had a lot of success last year with the Red Bull team, but wasn't that great. So I wanted to be prescient and be like a genius, a couple days and point. Not that that many people are going to see what I read and write and say, oh, he's a genius. I am a genius, but that's, I don't need to prove it by being a prophet of predicting the future. I think it's a great pick. I'm a great signing. I think he might be ready to go as the day one. It put him in ink as the starter in the midfield. I do think the one thing that's interesting, and it relates back to Kamani Stewart Baines.
Kamani Stewart Baines with a B.
Baines. Is that it is going to be really interesting to see what formation Armas picks, because the formation will determine which players kind of get started. I've predicted, and Mark Fishkin predicted, that it's going to be a 4-2-3-1. That will work for Omer Fernandez, but how that plays with the other players remains to be seen. The other thing that's really important is how do you play your 4-2-3-1, because the 4-2-3-1 really looks that way in the defensive side of the field. When you come out in the offense, you can spread those attackers wide, those wingers wide. You can kind of push them to the front of the line and have them lead the line alongside the striker. You can kind of bring up one of the two number sixes and kind of make one into like a kind of an eight. That was kind of one of the things that Dylan Powers used to do a bit of. Way back in the old days with the Colorado Rapids, when the Rapids played a 4-2-3-1, they would have Powers kind of be the up back, if that's a thing. Like, it's kind of like a strong safety, free safety kind of thing, if you're a throwball fan. So that's going to be a really interesting thing to see how all these players pan out. I'm excited. I think Omer Fernandez is a great pick. I do think I would like the Rapids to pick up somebody at a similar position, at a similar level or higher, to make Omer Fernandez have to work to earn a starting position, or to be in a position where he can be in a rotation with another really good player and we don't have to rely on him. We can say, if he pans out, fantastic, and if not, he just gets 1,500 minutes. Because we have a long list of players who Matt and I thought last season were destined to be our starting player, Max, Sidney Tavares, who didn't really show very well, and that made the whole team poorer for that fact. Oh, the other thing about the other, I said this really quickly on, I think on Twitter, but I was a little bummed, to be honest, about Sebastian Anderson and Omar and Ali Larraz getting 1 year deals, because it just means that the team doesn't have a lot of faith in them. It's kind of like, yeah, we'll give you another year. We'll see if you pan out. That's me being a little bit pessimistic. I was also, and we've talked about it on the pod before, hashtag free Ali. I think Ali Larraz should be playing 3,000 minutes for a USL team. I think that would be really fun. I would love to see him be in charge of a team as opposed to kind of languishing down in Next Pro. But, you know, you never know. Maybe this is Ali's year. Maybe he you know, gets himself 600 minutes for the senior team and really makes an impact for the Rapids. That would be a good thing. With Sebastian, I think you can put him in ink as the backup right back and sometime left back for the Colorado Rapids behind Keegan Rosenberry. And Rosenberry's of the age where counting on him for to play every single minute of all 34 games is not a good idea. You shouldn't do it.
I have to believe, Mark, with the if Omar Fernandez is getting the pay raise that I think he should be getting, his guaranteed compensation was like 170-180K for 2023 as with his last year with Red Bulls, listeners. So, I mean, I have to believe that he's getting more. And I have to believe, Mark, given the relationship that Armas has with him, the idea is that I'm going to make him the starter and I'm going to turn him into a better version of himself. And I kind of got a hint from the interview I did with Armas yesterday, which I will feature, listeners. It will be on the pod for you Christmas Eve, as a nice little present for you. And then maybe if you're stuck in mountain traffic as well, where he kind of hinted that maybe Fernandez is Red Bulls like, but then there's other aspects to where the way that that club operates and what they try to do tactically isn't necessarily aligned with. He can do more if put into a system that works with that. And maybe Armas escaping the Red Bulls bubble and then being aligned with the front office in a way that is pressing but then wants to do stuff with the ball in possession, that is aligned with Armas's values and how he thinks about the game and how his views have evolved, and that maybe aligns with Omar Fernandez's skill set maybe just slightly better than it would have been just full-on Gagan pressing and then being very direct and everything. So I like that idea, Mark. And in that regard, I want to believe that he's being brought here and that he's going to succeed at the right back and not need somebody else pushing him in order to be motivated, in order to have success. I have to admit, I agree with you, Rabbi. I don't know that there's nobody obvious to me who is in that role who's doing that. We've seen Sam Nicholson as a winger in the past with Robin Fraser. Where does Chris Armas like him? Is Sam Nicholson one of those players who's potentially on the chopping block just to clear out a roster spot? I'm not sure. Calvin Harris, he's been on the right, he's been on the left. Kevin Cabral is mostly a left winger. Jonathan Lewis, who I don't think is coming back, but if he is, he'll be on the left. I don't know that there's an obvious, you know, Mark, it's not like if Keegan Rosenberry is bad next year, like he was towards the end of the season, particularly defensively in that 3-4 game stretch that got Robin Fraser fired, I think we've seen enough from Sebastian Anderson where Sebi will get an opportunity. It's not clear to me, based on what I think Omar Fernandez is, that other than maybe Calvin Harris, there's an immediate, okay, if you have a bad game and you get beat out by your competition in training the following week, you're on the bench and the guy who is your understudy is starting for you. I'm not sure. I agree with you, Mark. I'm disappointed in the nature of the contracts for both Sebastian Anderson and Ali Larraz. I think on some level this shows like mutual distrust on both sides, because I think both the clubs and the players want an out after 1 year if it doesn't work out. I think the players want clear evidence that they're going to be given an opportunity with the first team, and that's going to be trusted. Them spending a third year in MLS Next Pro is not helping them any further. And at the same time, maybe the reason why they haven't gotten those opportunities is they're not good enough. So the club wants to see intent from the players in them showing up and providing whatever they haven't provided previously to prove they're first team players and not second team players. The players want to see the actual opportunities that's commensurate with them being good players for the reserve team, and at the same time both want to see the commitment in order to have that. And these contracts clearly show there's a mutual unsureness that the other party is going to give them a long-term opportunity, or that they are good enough to provide that opportunity as well. Mark, I have a hard time believing that 14 months from now, one of them is not on a USL championship roster. I'll say it that way. Mark, we're going to talk about Chris Armas and the MLS schedule, but why don't you tell our listeners how they can support us, including we are now on a brand new platform that we have not been on previously, albeit it's an outdated one.
Listeners, you can support us by subscribing to our Substack. The Substack, if you subscribe now, you will be entered into the pool of folks who will get next year, the 2024 season swag, which will be for our listeners. We have yet to reveal what that is, I think. I don't think we've said that publicly, Matt. But it's really exciting. But there will be swag for those who are paid subscribers. You can also support us just by being a regular subscriber to the Substack. And that means that you'll get a newsletter in your box. Usually there's one every week, every other week. During the regular season, you'll get my back pass article, Matt's kind of bonus stuff. Matt's done some really great stuff. We'll also stash for you some bonus interviews with players and audio that we aren't releasing to other folks. We've got a bunch of kind of backlogged audio that hasn't ever been released that we'd like to kind of drop on you, and hopefully we'll be doing that coming up. And excitingly, if you want to support us in the simplest, easiest, clickiest way, we are trying to branch out in our socials. And we have finally, yes, long, long after when we probably should have done this, we've created a Facebook page. Holding the Highline is on Facebook. We've been very active on Twitter for a very long time. Twitter is now called X. X, I have some concerns about, shall we say. And so I think we want to branch out in our socials and make our Facebook a bigger place. We're going to be posting a lot of the great photographs of John Bobiak on our Facebook, and they won't be posted anywhere else. We're not going to put them on X. They won't go on the Substack. And clearly you can't hear the pictures on the podcast. So that's a really good place for that. You'll get kind of advanced warning about some of the most important Rapids news on our Facebook page, and you'll get some of the early links to all of our articles and stuff. Some of the best stuff that Matt writes for some of the other outlets that he writes for. Maybe I'll do some cross-posting of some interesting Pittsburgh soccer stuff that might be of interest to Colorado Rapids fans. There's a lot of good stuff out there. So hit us up on the Facebook. You just need to go to the Holding the Highline page. If you search it, it'll pop up. Please click like. We need some boostage. We need a little bit more attention. And if you want to send me a check for $33, we'll pay Mark Zuckerberg to put that into everybody's feed, whether they like it or not. Maybe we'll target specifically those in the Wasatch Mountains who root for Salt Lake City and just troll them really, really hard the week of the Rocky Mountain Cup. Just like and subscribe to Holding the Highline, the best Colorado Rapids podcast, he said to Pablo Mastroeni personally in his Facebook Messenger page. So that's how you can help us out. We'd really appreciate it. And if you sign up and pay, there'll be some swag in your bag in the next coming season. And here to talk more about the next coming season and the schedule is our good friend Matt Pollard. Hit it, Matt.
Mark, if we ever hit it big with a sponsor to where we have like hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to burn and we've got nothing else to use it on, I am absolutely open to having a conversation about buying a billboard on I-15 outside America First Field and advertising the podcast or something Rapid Z or something to purely just troll RSL fans, albeit at the expense of us getting dunked on when the Rapids lose to RSL. And they're probably going to do that three times this year, listeners. And fortunately for us, two of those are going to be in Sandy, Utah. The MLS schedule was released yesterday at time of recording. Listeners, the Rapids will open their season on Saturday, February 24th at Portland Timbers. The home opener is set for Saturday, March 2nd against Nashville SC. Final home game of the season is October 5th. That is against Seattle Sounders. And for the second time ever, the Rapids will be closing out Decision Day at Austin FC. That match is set for October 19th. As I mentioned, Rapids get three Rocky Mountain Cup games. The first two of them will be at RSL. The first one is on March 9th. Third match day of the week of the season. Mark, that's a little early for a derby game, no? And then we are back in Sandy, Utah on May 18th. So listeners, my fellow birthday buddy, Abby Mood, and I, for our birthday, we get to watch the Rapids lose the Rocky Mountain Cup at RSL. And then the final game of the Rocky Mountain Cup and the only one at DSG, the season will be July 20th. That is the final game before the break for Leagues Cup, presumably, as the Rapids don't play next until, I think, Labor Day, Saturday. What else do we have on here, Mark? We get seven games against Eastern Conference opponents. That includes Lionel Messi and Inter Miami, albeit it's a road game, and that is on April 6th. And then the Rapids also get NYCFC and Cincinnati on the road. Their home Eastern Conference games are Nashville, Montreal, Red Bull New York, and Toronto. So Chris Armas gets a revenge tour on both July 13th and on September 21st against his former employers. And then also we've got a few non-Saturday games, Mark. The NYCFC match in the Bronx, that is on a Sunday. And then there are seven midweek games. That includes the 4th of July, which is on a Thursday, I believe. So six Wednesday games. And so the first one of that is May 15th against Vancouver. And the Rapids have a second Sunday game that is a home match against St. Louis on July 7th. So a proper more day break, with the Thursday game being the 4th of July. And then we also have two afternoon kickoffs, Mark, the away match at Seattle on March 16th, and then LAFC on March 20th are both afternoon kickoffs. So mixing it up, I think that's technically fewer midweek games, listeners, and a new variety of the Eastern Conference opposition that we haven't seen in a while, and then two afternoon kickoffs. So, Mark, maybe I'll get to do an early hike those days, or at the very least, I'll get an early start on the next one as opposed to being up till midnight so I can be in bed by 10 to hit the trail by 6 a.m. But, Mark, you've seen the schedule. What do you think?
Well, so I always look at the schedule selfishly and think the East Coast games. I think a lot about the East Coast games and which ones I can travel to. It's kind of a bummer because for last year, they went to Columbus, which was great. It was great to go to an away game at Columbus. I got to see, you know, the eventual MLS champions. I got to sit and watch Wilfred Nancy be interviewed twice last year, once in Pittsburgh after the Pittsburgh Riverhounds defeated them in the U.S. Open Cup, and once in against the Colorado Rapids, which they beat the Rapids pretty good. Although Cole Bassett had a really nice goal in that game. But more importantly, they're playing Cincinnati this year. I went to Cincinnati a couple of years ago. I would love to go again, but I'd rather kind of get around to the rest of the league. The Inter Miami game would have been the perfect away game for me, and I would have been able to request a credential and see how that goes and fly down to Miami, and that would have been my East Coast away game, even though I'd have to get on a plane. Except the first of the month, I have to work for my congregation in Erie, Pennsylvania. And telling them I want to go to a soccer game is not going to work. So that is a real, real bummer for me. I know. Boo. It's really maybe next year.
Messi
maybe
is
next
more
year.
Important than Judaism.
Than my job, right? And then fulfilling the basic requirements of my part-time congregation's requirements. So the best opportunity for me is the game that I one of the games that I will most likely be going to is probably Colorado Austin on June 15th in Colorado, or Colorado Montreal in Colorado, or Colorado Sporting Kansas City on July 4th. So those are some. That's kind of fun that I get to go see the Rapids back home at DSGP. So I'll probably be back in Colorado this year to hang out. I'll make a vacation of it. It'll be good times. The schedule is a solid one for the Rapids. I mean, getting Messi is probably the most important thing for us. Some of the other kind of highlights of the schedule for us include playing an away game against NYC this year and playing home against Red Bull, which is going to be a nice little game for Chris Armas, as you mentioned, Matt. Other than that, the schedule is pretty fair and balanced. The only other disappointment I guess I have is I've always wanted to go. This is going to sound weird, but I've always wanted to go to Houston for an away game, and that game takes place I think midweek, so that's not great for me. I might do it anyways and see if I can't work it out. So, you know, it's I think the interesting thing is you know, sometimes one of the other things that comes out of these schedule things is someone with advanced metrics does the math to figure out who's got the easiest schedule and who's got the hardest schedule. That's, of course, based on how teams did last year. So for the Colorado Rapids, when you finish 28th, the whole schedule looks hard. Like there are no easy games there. When you play in the Western Conference and you've got to play LAFC, you know, that's an issue. We get to play the Galaxy twice, but, you know, the Galaxy aren't going to be terrible again this year. Those games are sort of late. They're July 17th and October 2nd. That's not great for the Rapids, who, if the Galaxy were bad again this year, you'd want to beat up on those weak teams. I do want to say one last thing, which is our opening game away is against Portland. And that's going to be interesting because Portland has signed Phil Neville to be their head coach. Phil Neville, who was the coach of Inter Miami when they were terrible last season before they signed Lionel Messi. And so we are going to get to find out very quickly what, if anything, Phil Neville is going to be able to make of the Portland team, who were not very good last year. We have yet to see what they're going to come together with, and we'll get to see whether Phil Neville is a competent MLS manager really out of the gate. By the way, in other semi-Portland related news, former Portland boss Caleb Porter got a job just the other day. Who picked him up, Matt? I think it was
New England. Was it New England?
Yeah, New England. New England has recycled their coaches. They had Jay Heaps. They had Bruce Arena. So I don't know, man. I don't know. These are great choices. But anyways, that's a fun little side tidbit for Rapids fans. Any other things about the schedule, or have we gone on long enough tonight, Matt? You've got to ask HGHL.
We've talked enough about the schedule, Mark. I will say book your travel and give it a few weeks out, because we got to get together with the Rapids podcasting mafia to do a megapod probably at the DNVR bar, and we have to do a meetup with the Highliners and everything, because it has been it would have been what the 4th of July last year would have been the last time I think most of our listeners saw you before the move to Pittsburgh, and I've only seen you like four times since then, so that is too long, best friend. Mark, let's talk about I've confirmed Chris Armas is on a 2-year deal, Mark, and that was kind of one of the big uncertainties we had about the Armas hiring, and similar to the Ollie LaRoz, Sebastian Anderson news, seems very short-term, very stopgappy, and very, let's see how this goes, but let's give both parties an easy out in case players don't get what they want or the club doesn't get what they want from the players. Mark, a 2-year contract is like the MLS coaching equivalent of a short-term relationship, a summer fling almost, and I have to wonder how much of this is just the last three times that Porrick Smith has had to fire a head coach, they've had a year plus left on their contract and possibly a buyout associated with that. I know for a fact, listeners, there was a buyout with Pablo. I've heard, but was unable to confirm, that it was a lump sum, not a getting paid out for the duration of the contract. I think there was a buyout. Wasn't sure of the circumstances on that surrounding Anthony Hudson, and then obviously haven't been able to hear anything about that on Robin Fraser. So, you know, Mark, I feel like Armas is going to be given the year no matter what. And if they have to back out of it, like, it's not going to be that much from a monetary standpoint, and they let him see it out. And I could understand where, given where he is at from a stock standpoint, the simple fact that the Rapids were interested in him, he couldn't really say no to a lesser contract. And so I think you play the first year, let's see some progress, even if the team doesn't move significantly up the table. And this team has to be competitive in 2024. And if they are, we'll discuss a renegotiation or an extension, or then maybe Armas' stock is higher enough to where he can get an actual job with actual money like he had to an extent at New York and definitely at Toronto. Mark, do you have confidence that do you now view Porrick and other people's comments about Armas being the perfect guy for the job differently, given that it was a short-term contract?
I'm okay with it. I kind of get that, like, you know, if you sign a guy, I don't I don't know that for me, these are about financial decisions that teams make that don't necessarily work out the way they imagined. I mean, I believe Pablo Mastroianni signed a 3-year deal when they re-signed him after the 2016 season, and then they fired him in the 2017 season, you know, because things went really badly that season. It didn't mean anything. It just meant that the team had to pay the guy for a lot longer. And coaches' contracts just aren't the kind of big money that, like, DPs are. By the way, a recommended listening Total Soccer Show did an interesting pod this last week about, or maybe 2 weeks ago, about the MLS rule changes, and talked about really the lack of MLS rule changes. And one of those kind of lack of rules changes that was made was they didn't have MLS did not add a fourth DP this year. But when you're talking about kind of money, you know, the players are making a lot more than the coaches. So making a 2-year commitment to Chris Armas is kind of normal. I mean, I think Armas is probably grateful for that chance. He's got to get it right here. And again, if you didn't listen to it, go back and listen to my interview with Mark Fishkin. Fishkin was not high on Armas. I don't think Red Bull fans are high on Armas. So I think in context that makes a lot of sense, which is, you know, they could express interest in Armas and say, we think you're the man for the job. We think you have a lot of potential as a coach. We think that you have potential, not like proven track record of success. It was noted this last week that Armas has won a supporter shield. And I thought that was a thing that we had forgotten, that he won the supporter shield. But he won the supporter shield because he took over after Jesse Marsh left for, did he go to Salzburg before he went to Leipzig? I think he went to Salzburg before he went to Leipzig.
That sounds right.
But you know, like, still, I mean, you know, he's a supporter shield winning coach, whereas we haven't had a coach who's won any hardware since forever, you know, like, our last coach who won hardware was Gary Smith, if I'm not mistaken, right, Matt? So that's a long time ago. So that's my take on Armas. I think it's okay.
To quote that episode of TSS, Mark, with regards to no DPs, therefore everything's just based on GAM. So to quote David Gost and everything, let the Rapids spend $850,000 in GAM on 4 defenders.
Yeah. Shout out to Goss. Good dude. Yeah.
We should have David Goss on the show. We haven't had him.
We should. My big get has always been the dream get, and I actually just haven't asked him. I think he would probably do it, is Andrew Wiebe. I just feel guilty about
If we got Doyle, we should be able to get Wiebe.
I feel the other way around, but the two of them, for me, the two of them work too much. And the thing that's crazy about Goss, that to give some shout-out love to some of our fellow podcasters, albeit people who actually make a full-time wage doing soccer. Like, Goss is on the Total Soccer Show. He does the radio call or the TV call for the Red Bull MLS Next team. He does some college soccer calls. I think he was doing either Fordham or Hofstra. He used to do some USL calls as well, and he's working full time for Major League Soccer. So he's really busy. And I feel the same about Wiebe, because I feel like every time I turn on a podcast or the video for MLS, there's Wiebe. So that's the only reason I don't get him. And Wiebe also now has 2 kids. So, and they're little people. And I know how hard that is. But Matt, you've still shamed me. I will reach out and ask him and just have a nice chat. The nice thing is, by the way, and this is a shout out. I know some people do not like the MLS punditocracy because they are stands for the league and whatever, and they have to kind of say it the way the league wants them to. I think that being said, they're all very smart guys and they're very hardworking, and they've always been really kind to us. I mean, Matt and I have both been personally, and our podcasts and our writings have been personally highlighted by all 3 of those dudes. We have no business being mentioned in the same breath as some of the big heavyweights in the industry, and they've always given us due deference, and much love and respect to those guys for being really kind to us, to 2 guys who are, you know, literally for me, podcasting from the basement.
Listeners, we have an Ask HDHL from Matthew Wick. Thank you at Matthew Wick for the Ask HDHL. As the off season begins, what's our shopping budget looking like in terms of Monopoly money, Garber bucks, and what have you? Also, what roster designations do we have available? U22, international, etc. So I should say, Matthew, the international roster slots are a little bit up in the air because there's a possibility that a couple of the guys who've been with the team or in the league a little bit longer could be getting their green cards. So there's some uncertainty there. And then also the question is if any of the draft picks who are internationals also come in. Anderson Rosa, the left back out of UCF, and then the forward who was the last pick taken in the who was the last Rapids pick taken, who's in the third round, the one who's out of Manhattan. Both of them will be international players. Everybody else from a draft standpoint will be domestic. Omer Fernandez is domestic, and Miguel Navarro, who was in the Andrew Gutman trade, already has his green card as well, so he will be domestic. So it's a little bit early to be talking international roster slots. That said, I think the price for those is going slightly down. Nashville traded four of them across, or five of them across three different teams for, I think, $825K in total cam. So normally you'd think for a full year you're looking at 150-200, and so that might be slightly less than what it is previously, albeit getting it from certain teams will be difficult there. And then the one U22 slot that is currently available is from the club declining the 2024 option on Gustavo Villasia. So that slot is open, and if there's ever a resolution on Max where Max is no longer with the Rapids and counting against them from roster standpoint, Max is currently also taking up a U22 slot. Mark, you and Jason Maxwell are the big proponents of doing spreadsheets to look at GAM and everything. Do we have an idea of where the Rapids are at? I feel like they're relatively net neutral or even in the plus after the draft and after the Gutman trade.
Yeah, so I was trying to update my spreadsheets on the starting with the international slots. And I'm not sure. It looks to me like we have currently nine international roster spots. Max Alves, Kevin Cabral, Marco Ilicha, Maxu, Navajo, Nicholson. I think he still occupies one. Ronan and Tavares, getting us to eight, giving us one open spot. I'm not sure about that. Alex Gersbach, Gustavo Villasia no longer on the roster, and Daniel Chacon
Gersbach
injured.
Gersbach is still with the team, Mark.
Gersbach is, but Villasia is not.
Villasia is not. Daniel Chacon is.
Yeah,
unless if the Rapids were to put him on the season-ending injury list with him coming back in the summer, they could free up the international roster spot that he takes up.
Yeah. Anyhow, my point is that I think the Rapids are kind of tight with international spots unless they're doing green card magic, which they always do. So we'll talk more about that. In terms of money, we have plenty of money. I mean, that's basically the way it works out. Currently, we have $9,066,497 under contract based on the last reported contract from 2023. So that number is definitely going to go up. The budget charge for players, though, is the important number. And according to, because a bunch of those players that I listed their salaries, they're free to us or their DPs. So only the first $651,000 hits the contract. According to my current spreadsheets, we have $5.7 million accounted for in a budget charge. The MLS budget cap is $5.2 million, meaning we're $500,000 over the budget charge. But the reason that that works just fine is that my math didn't include the GAM spending that we have or the TAM spending. If you add those monies together, the Rapids should have as much as $9.8 million in cap, GAM, and TAM, which means they have plenty of money over the cap. Additionally, I currently have, assuming that this is going to stay the way it has been, two DPs on the roster. Andreas Maxu, who's making $1.29 million, and Rafael Navajo, who's making $1.4 million.
Kevin There's Cabral is a DP, Mark.
He can be, but he doesn't have to be, in the sense that when your max budget charge is $651,000, he can be a TAM player if you want him to be a TAM player.
We know the Rapids aren't spending discretionary TAM.
Right, but you don't really need to if you... Because you can do it on GAM as well. You can use that at the...
Okay, maybe.
It's possible.
I am under the impression for the people that I've spoken to that expect those three players to be DPs at the start of the 2024
I think that's right. I think you're right. The only reason I'm saying it is when you've got a player who's only on 800,000, the difference between them being a TAM player and a DP player is really about whose money you're using to spend it. And I always say this, and you've heard it from me a million times, but like, I'm pretty promiscuous with Stan Kroenke's, you know, money, in the sense that like, it doesn't matter to me. It's not a whole lot of money one way or another. But the point is about roster flexibility, Matt. And if the question is, do the Rapids have roster flexibility? The answer is they have a ton of it. They have, if they made Kevin Cabral, the point is this, if they made Kevin Cabral the third DP, then they still have millions of dollars to spend on discretionary TAM. If they don't make him the third DP and they spend him with TAM, then they can go out and buy a third DP at the rate of, they could buy $1 million player, they could buy a $2 million player, they could buy a $7 million player, they could buy a $50 million player, right? That's the thing of why I usually don't take a player who's under $1 million and put him in this quote so-called DP category. Go ahead, Matt. Matt wants to argue with me.
So, Mark, you're forgetting that the Rapids are only paying 50% of his guaranteed compensation. Galaxy are still picking up 50% of his contract. So he's not at 800K. He's on 1.6. And I'm pretty sure 1.6 million is above the threshold where with discretionary spending or with GAM, they can be bought down to or below the max budget charge to then be not made a designated player. The player on the roster who is easiest for them to make not a DP would be Andreas Mekshu, is my understanding.
That's now we're having a math argument, which is like,
I'm here really, for the Rapids math, Mark.
No, it's an accounting question, which is like, I think I understand what you're saying, but I think what you're saying is, no, his salary is $1.8 million and 1.6. You can't. My spreadsheet says 1.8. Just so you know.
1.8? Okay, well then it going up doesn't help with this. In any case.
No, but my point is this, which is if his contract is 1.8 and the 1.8 is charged to the Rapids, even though the Galaxy are giving them half that money, then you're right. You can't really buy him down at that rate. I didn't understand it that way. I understood it as the Rapids' end of the charge was only like $900,000. And that they basically are paying $248,000 of they could pay $248,000 to buy him down below the threshold because the Galaxy are paying the other half of the money. But that's a question that I don't really know the answer to. And if I sat down with Porik, he would give me a long-winded, very intelligent answer, which didn't answer the question for us. But
the fact that this is immaterial. The fact that this is that the answer to this question, listeners, is not obvious. And Mark and I are sickos for this stuff. And we read the same roster rules and have the same understanding and talk to the same people. And we've come to different conclusion.
Yeah.
Speaks to the idiosyncratic overcomplication that is the MLS roster rules and regulations. I've had this happen, Mark, where the Twitter admin for an MLS club's official Twitter account. This was not the Rapids, to be clear. I was arguing with somebody on Twitter about something. I was explaining a rule. It was about a player involved on this particular team that was not the Rapids. That Twitter account then DMs me, presumably, Mark, this is a Twitter admin person and not somebody technical front office. And then we have a long-winded argument, and I eventually win the argument, and they admit that they are wrong. Like, the fact that, like, there are people one degree of Kevin Bacon removed from Porik Smith who do not understand this and could not make heads or tails of these rules speaks to how stupid and weird they are. In any case, Matthew Wick, the Rapids have three DPs. We know they're not buying anybody down to then spend a bunch of money to bring in a fourth. They've got a bunch of GAM. They've got a bunch of cap space freed up because they have not yet replaced the salaries that were lost in dumping of particularly Brian Acosta and Michael Barrios. That was like 1.3, 1.4 million off the top of my head. Trading Gutman out for Navarro was a net increase in the salary budget. And then so, again, unless Omir Fernandez is making triple of what he was making his last year with the Red Bulls, they've still got plenty of spots and everything for that. So they've got budget in terms of salary that they can add that is still within the budget charge. They've got, in theory, a bunch of GAM to spend and go out and get a Kellen Acosta, I was going to say Kevin Cabral, a Kevin Cabral level expenditure, not necessarily a spend $1 million in GAM for a guy who's worth $1 million in GAM. And they've got a U22 slot. What do they do with that, given that that U22 slot is probably going to be spent internationally? So then there's an extra cost if you need to get an extra INT slot. That is in there, and then presumably that's coming with a transfer fee, to say nothing of what happens with the Max situation. So similarly to Porik Smith, Mark, you and I have talked a lot and argued, and I think we kind of answered Matthew's question, but not fully, because it's MLS and it's the Rapids and it's complicated. All right, Mark, let's get out of here. Listeners, follow us on Twitter collectively, soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids96podcast. Like us on Facebook as well. Head on over to our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com, where you can support us financially, view Mark's written work as well. On that, rate, review, share, subscribe, wherever you get your podcasts. And so that obviously, you know, rating us helps other people find us. Tell other Rapids fans about us. And with that, listeners, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and the only time that you will hear from us probably before January 1st will be my exclusive interview with Chris Armas, which will be dropping on Christmas Eve with a very special and very timely pod intro that I'm very excited about, but it's going to be nerdy. So listeners, Happy New Year, and we'll see you in 2024.
Happy Kwanzaa, Merry Christmas, joy to the world, peace unto all humans.
Moving. Speaking of fullbacks, Andrew Gutman seemed absolutely tickled pink to be going home to the Chicago Fire, who he refused to sign for. No, he didn't. They refused to sign him,
yeah.
Just a weird deal overall.
So, Burgundy Wave does a great job covering a team that has been really bad, and it is really hard. They did, in their tweet at least, did not read the full article, say, fan favorite Andrew Gutman.
I will shout out the Burgundy Wave. I mean, sort of on that front, if you wanted to know anything about the Rapids, that was the place to go. If you wanted to have an opinion on the, you know, on the minutia, they had it.